Dieter and Hutch, we're back. It's another football season. It's upon us. We're excited. We're excited to be here. We're excited to talk about 49ers Seahawks. But first, Jake, I heard somebody got paid.
Not really. Not really. I mean, kind of. Juwan Jennings got some incentives, which was kind of what I threw out there. And then the longer it lingered, I'm like, should the 49ers even give him that? They did. They gave him up to $3 million or something. I love how it's posited and put forth by insiders, the rats of the earth, as I like to call them.
Subtle. Understated.
There's just never like a, they're always like, this is the most beautiful win of all time. What a win for Juwan Jennings. It's like the 49ers said, all right, if you'll stop complaining and practice and play, and you play well, you get a little bit of extra money, and then you get to go into free agency, right? That's right. That's what it is.
Totally reasonable. I think you suggested it almost to the dollar. I think a lot of other people just said, just give them a little sprinkling of something, and we can move on from this. What was accomplished? Very little.
What was accomplished is Juwan Jennings' calf injury. How legitimate was it? He definitely wasted some practice time. That's what happened.
John Lynch went on KMBR this morning, Thursday, and said, yeah, the contract and the calf, they just got resolved at the same time.
Awesome.
Isn't that so weird? It's like, John, seriously, John. So that's where that is. Kyle says that Juwan's going to play on Sunday. How much stock do you put into that statement?
That he's going to play? Yeah, I think he's going to play. What is the alternative?
Fair enough. What will that look like, Jake?
I'm going to guess he's going to play about 60% of the snaps, something like that.
Wow.
That would be my guess.
That would be a lot. I'm not saying that you're wrong. I just don't know. What are you getting, a 60% Juwan Jennings at 60%?
I mean, I think he's going to be fine. I mean, I don't know how much time he needs to ramp up. Like, it's not like, you know, his speed is going to drop off that much. I don't know. I just think he's like kind of a gamer and he'll be fine. I'm not really worried about it.
I've always maintained, I've heard, and this was in particular with Klay Thompson after his injuries, people go, well, Klay's game has never been about speed or.
Fair.
And then I go, so what happens when he has less of it? Like, it's like, oh no, he gets by on guile and smarts, and he's not very fast. So he doesn't have a step to lose. Now he's lost it. So I'm not optimistic, shocker, about Juwan Jennings on Sunday. Certainly will be a good blocker, I imagine, incentivized perhaps to do that. He's going to want the ball. You know he's going to want the ball. I still maintain that this whole thing gets sneaky toxic and that they move them out mid-season regardless of record.
I don't think so. I think they're too obsessive about comp picks and they just say whatever, he'll net us like a fourth or a fifth, or at least he'll cancel out anybody we sign in free agency. So
right,
yeah.
Speaking of guys that they are signing and re-signing, how many times can you shuffle Russell Gage from the active roster to the practice squad? I mean, this is bureaucratic nonsense. I'm not even fully abreast on the ins and outs of it all. But between Marquez Valdes-Scantling and Russell Gage, they're basically just doing, what is it, the cup game on the street? Just trying, which one's on the roster?
Three-card Monty?
Yeah, exactly. They're doing a three-card Monty with crappy receivers.
Yeah, it's
that's telling.
It's basically, it seems like Valdes-Scantling was going to get scooped up maybe by the Seahawks, who are in need of receivers. Probably not. They cut him. The Raiders certainly could use him with Amari Cooper retiring. There are a lot of teams that could just use a really bad veteran receiver, and he certainly is a receiver who has played NFL games. And I think what happened is teams had interest and the 49ers said, all right, you go to the active roster. Nobody wants Russell Gage, and Russell Gage will go to our practice squad, even though he's more valuable to us right now.
Which one of you is shittier at the moment, as seen
and
in
Kyle
the eyes
Shanahan
of others?
Effectively said, I don't know yet. We'll find out this week.
every day we change our mind. Kyle said they're going to have five wide receivers up for this game. As I'm looking at the roster now, they have four healthy wide receivers. So, And by, I guess that's with Gage. So it's Valdez, Scantling, Pearsall, Jennings, Moore, and Gage, with Jordan Watkins, who is on the roster, but will likely be down for the game given his injury and the fact that he's not practicing. The one other thing before we get into the X's and O's and all the cool stuff that's going to happen in this game. Yetur Grosmatos, just not practicing, not a thing.
Yeah.
Mythical Yetur Grosmatos.
Why did they activate him off PUP when they could have waited four games?
Yeah.
And saved a roster spot. And granted, sure, he could be back by week two or three, but then you're saving what, a week? You're saving 2 weeks, maybe?
Why does this team valuable do anything?
That was worth it rather than just letting him take those 4 weeks? And I didn't really understand that.
Nope.
And of course, there's always people out there that are like, oh, the 40... You know, actually, it makes perfect sense. There are certain people that like to say every move the 49ers make makes perfect sense.
Those breaks, just pump them. I know where
I'm
you're
just
going.
Saying. They we never made an incorrect move. They're all brilliant.
Well, I mean, heaven forbid you don't put Jacob Cowing on injured reserve before you cut down to 53. You have to do. And by Russell Gage is just like, what? I feel bad for him. Look, what the hell did I do, man?
Snip, snap, snip, snap, snip.
Legitimately, for Russell Gage's sake, I hope someone plucks him off the practice squad just to screw the Niners over on that
front. Yeah, I guess they're doing the Dante Johnson with him. Remember where Dante Johnson would get bumped up to the active roster too many times and then he'd get cut and they get brought back, but no other team had even a lick of interest, and so he just did that for like 5 years.
Yeah, that is yeah.
Dante Johnson.
I've written a lot of stories about those pregame stories. You got to type it out like, here's who's up, here's who's down. I mean, you could just, I think I probably had a keyboard extension for just Deontay Johnson has been called up from the practice squad to just press three keys and it all popped right in there. This is the first game preview of the season, 49ers Seahawks. And just on the surface, let's be clear about this. It's going to be rather vanilla. Right. Like, I don't think it's not going to be preseason where everyone's just dropping into their zones. But on the whole, the first game of the season is a big time feel it out game. And it is about establishing the principles of an offense, the principles of a defense, and seeing if you can win with just that and adjusting if you have to. But no one's coming in here with a bespoke game plan. This is more teams putting in what they want to do and hoping it works for the day, a la the NBA. Which is every game in the NBA.
Yeah, I think it's something where it's like an offense and a defense on the Seattle side where you're like really excited about scheme. Yeah. And yet this is probably as simple as either team will really go, at least in my view. Because like Seattle, you're like, ooh, they got Nick Emanwari. Like, what can they do with him? It's like week one, maybe nothing.
That's for week 18. Maybe if we live
so
that long.
Weird. It's going to be so interesting, I think, to be able to hold up these two games and really say these teams are not at all what they were, or they somehow, you know, most of these pieces stayed intact. But having that sort of point on either end of the spectrum is going to be really interesting.
And you mentioned it with like Emanwari. Let's start with the 49ers offense against the Seattle defense. If Seattle's defense does show some wrinkles, and by the way, you know, in the preseason, they weren't exactly, you know, rushing four, dropping seven, straight up cover three. They were working on some stuff, and they're a weird scheme.
They're still going to do stuff like they're, you know, McDonald is still going to, he likes to do a lot of like rotating where one side comes down and the other side drops into coverage. It's a lot of like yin yang type of stuff, post snap rotations with the safeties, trying to mess with your head as he did with the Ravens.
Yeah. And we saw what that did to Brock Purdy. We saw how it worked when, apologies for the, we'll do the, hold on. Okay. Yeah. This is a breakdown sheet. Football Insights puts these out on a weekly basis. They're so valuable. It really comes off of Fantasy Points data, but I don't want to pay the $400 a year for Fantasy Points data.
It's nice because everybody else has to pay like an insane amount of money.
It's good data though. I got a good little bit of a look at it, and let me tell you, it's good stuff. Regardless, we don't have that kind of money, though. You can become a member and help us get that sweet Fantasy Points subscription.
Get the preseason guide.
and the preseason guide, which is magnificent. Jake did a tremendous job on that. Okay, so what we're seeing here, the most interesting aspect, there's a lot of blue, there's a lot. Don't worry about that. Look about middle of the screen, find the Seahawks logo, and then go one column over, and you'll see there's a 7. And that 7 is under cover 0. They ran the second most cover 0 of any team in the NFL last year. The Raiders were 1. I'm not sure the Raiders were intentionally playing cover 0. I think that they just ended up that way because they were so bad at defense. They had no idea what was happening. And yeah, that's how that went down. So in running more cover 0 than anybody in the NFC, Jake, it really doesn't bode well for the Niners in the sense of, that's the thing that can kill him. Not only does it kill Brock Purdy, but now you have 7-8 guys across the line of scrimmage. This is one of the big reasons why I think the Niners are moving to 12 personnel this year, other than the coaches straight up telling you that. And it's because we've talked about it in years past. The way to stop the outside zone run is just put 5 or 6 guys on the line of scrimmage. And Seattle, with their, I'm not sure if they're a 3-man front, a 4-man front, a 5-man front, a 6-man front. Like, with that wide-ass front, they can stop the outside run. Now, there might be some opportunities in the gap, but, oh, look at that. They might have the best defensive tackle unit in the NFL in Leonard Williams and Byron Murphy. Jaron Reed ain't half bad either. They have linebackers that fill the run gaps every time. They cannot do anything else, but they fill the run gaps, and a secondary that has a chance to be absolutely dominant this season. Devin Witherspoon, Reek Woolen, that's Kobe Bryant. Like, that's really good stuff. Julian Love is an underrated player. This Seattle defense has a chance to be the best in the NFL this season. I legitimately believe that. And this is going to be a fascinating test for Kyle Shanahan in his scheme, because he'll need to show answers to some of the basic questions this Seahawks defense will ask, because they might be more complicated than some of the questions they're going to get for the remainder of the season.
Yeah, I think the basic number one question is, like, with that front, like, can they handle Leonard Williams at the point of attack? And listen, like, he didn't have the best year last year, but, like, Byron Murphy did give Dominic Pooney some real trouble.
Yes, he
like
did.
In that Week 11 game, like, he was a problem. And I think that level of, like, the 49ers are going to want to get McCaffrey involved early. And there's just going to be, like, there's going to be a real presence at the point of attack that I think the 49ers have to prove for anything else that they can deal with. And again, they started last season, I think, with that game where that was the Eric Saubert game, right? Mm-hmm. I think they like to try and go physical to sort of mask some of what they're, and the fact that they, like, don't have that many receivers.
Right.
I think they go 2 tight ends. They go a little bit heavier than they use, and they try to establish the run a little bit. I don't know how much Brian Robinson will be involved, but there is a physical element to his game
for sure
that could be useful. And they try and keep it simple. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a little bit play action. You know, last year they started, I think it was down the stretch, they started incorporating that a little bit more. So, I think that's the number one thing they have to establish. And then in terms of the pass game, can you be clear? Like, can you identify what the Seahawks are doing? And do you have basic answers where, okay, I actually don't know where they're rotating here, but I have, like, a check down. I have an answer, and I'm not going to get screwed over where it happened a few times last year where Brock Purdy's just taking shots or they just don't have something picked up right in terms of pressure. So they had some issues with hot answers last year, and I think that's going to be a big key.
I mean, this is a team that wants to play a single high safety most of the time in the Seahawks. It's just a question of, one, who that safety is, because they'll just rotate like 4 dudes back there, and that guy's the cover 1 man or the
and
cover
Witherspoon
3 center.
And Witherspoon is kind of like a star position where he's just doing everything.
100%, which, going back to your initial statement about Week 18, like, how does Iman Wari and Witherspoon play together? Like, that's not like only one ball. How are they going to know? It's like, oh, dear God, how do we balance the fact that they can put one of those guys on both sides of the field at any given point? But I don't expect that early. Neither do you. They want to play a lot of man. They want to press you up. They have the corners to do that. They have the pass rush to do that. Their pass rush really came along late last season. And in that, it's really going to come down to the same question that the Niners were faced with a lot of times last year. Can you win in press off man to man? And can you win fast enough so where Brock Purdy can get the ball out with a clear window, with a clear decision. That's where the Jennings delay in practicing really bothers me, because that would be, in theory, the go-to guy. That's the guy that Brock trusted again and again, even though he wasn't really open last year. Yeah. Now it's on Ricky, who I do think will be able to do it, but that's not a guarantee, especially when we're talking about, you know, again, two great corners in Reek Woolen and Devin Witherspoon. So the pass game's a big question mark, in my opinion.
Woolen is, I don't know, there's some ups and downs with Woolen. Like, he has the physicality, he's flash, but like, he's pretty inconsistent. I feel like he took a step back last year. We'll see where he's at this year.
I still really like him, and maybe we'll have a better read on it this year. But last year, the secondary was covering up for some real defensive line issues early in the year. When that defensive line started to come around in Seattle, I think things changed on the back end, and I'm going off of the end of last season, given that Mike McDonald was in his first year as head coach, and this is the year that you should expect that defense to go to the next level. Again, nice to catch him early when they're just going to be trying out the principles. But can the Niners run the ball against, like, maybe. I know we've been beating around it. Can they run the ball against this team?
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know if Tyrese Knight, their second linebacker, will play. That'll be important. Ernest Jones, I really love. He's great in the run game. He can look a little stiff in the pass game, but he's pretty sharp. He just has a nose for the ball and kind of gets everything. There's a reason they made like seven linebacker moves last year and traded for Ernest Jones. I think it was a fourth, and then extended him, because they're very particular about what they ask of their linebackers. I do think they'll have some success running the ball. I also think there's going to be some real struggles where stuff gets blown up. See Ben Bartsch struggle. Going to see Brendel week one. Can he, like, Brendel in week one's usually the worst version of Brendel. Dom Pooney coming off a knee injury. Like, you got some gap plugging defensive tackles up front. And there were times last year where, with the outside zone stuff, where when teams throw that sort of front where it's a 3-5 man front, and then every single offensive lineman is stuck and can't get to the second level, then like Ernest Jones had like a free lane to the ball. So can you make sure that Christian McCaffrey is not getting one-on-one and then two-on-one in the open field? Like, I don't know. That's going to be on Kyle to scheme that up and put them in advantageous positions. I think the two tight ends will be an interesting way to sort of maybe resolve that, maybe ease some of that pressure on McCaffrey. We'll see. I think they're gonna have some moments where they're running the ball effectively, but it might be a little disjointed.
I mean, you mentioned him earlier. I think you did undersell how good Leonard Williams was at the tail end of last year. He was an absolute menace. And I'm so glad you brought up the interior of the offensive line. I think we like those three guys, maybe the guards better than the center. Regardless, you have...
Nice pump. Okay.
There you go. The center, as you said, total wild card going into this game. He needs to work, you know, get some of that scar tissue broken up, I think is the way that he describes it, as the season goes along. That's not a great thing to have when you have a team that literally plays a nose tackle. Like, that's not very fun. You're going head-to-head, snap after snap. Here's Byron Murphy in your face. And then the guards, you're going to have Ben Bartsch with an elbow guard of some sort, right? He's going to be wearing a brace on his elbow. And Dom Pooney's going to be wearing a brace on his knee that's injured. And I'm not a football genius or anything, but if I was building a defensive game plan, I would attack Ben Bartsch's arm and Dominic Pooney's knee. Not in any sort of way to get him injured, but like, hey, Pooney might not have the best ability to go side to side, seeing as his knee is injured. And that's,
I'm not
how
sure he's ever had the best ability to go side to side to begin with.
All the more reason to attack him that way, to stunt on him. All the more reason to power rush a Ben Bartsch. I mean, I don't think that those injuries have gotten talked up enough, because we've looked at the alternative and we said we're willing to risk further injury with those two players, like, moving forward. But against this front, like, if we're talking the Saints, if we're talking the Jaguars, if we're talking another team, it doesn't fire off as many alarm bells in my mind, but it fires off alarm bells in my mind here. I got some real questions, though. The Niners can attack as you said, this linebacker core, and that's the Kyle Shanahan bread and butter. If they can get into the play action passing game, which they didn't do the first time they played the Seahawks last year, and then adjusted to that the second time, if they can do under center play action, kind of classic Garoppolovian Shanahan offense.
Yeah.
I think that there's some big opportunities over the middle of the field here against Seattle.
Yeah. The other component is the complexities of Mike McDonald's defense makes it really hard on the offense. Also makes it really hard on the defense,
yeah.
Especially in week one. There's a lot to communicate. There's a lot to get across. There's a lot of young guys. And Shanahan likes to put players in conflict. And I think week one could be a tough time for that defense to be all on the same page. You know, they got some guys coming back from injuries. It doesn't look like they're going to have Nwosu, their edge. So, like, yeah. there's just going to be a lot to communicate. And I do think that there will be some chunk plays available for the Niners on the back end.
Don't look out though, because they signed Chaz Surratt, and we all know that Chaz Surratt was a real game changer on special teams. I mean, the special teams film was incredible, according to Mike McDonald. So Chaz Surratt out there. And who knows, maybe he'll even play in this game. I kind of actually like Chaz Surratt for the 49ers this preseason. Never really got a sniff. Let's flip it the other way. This is the really interesting one, because the Seahawks offense last year was like not good. Let's just call it what it was.
Right.
It had the players, but its offensive line was horrendous. It had injuries at running back, and whatever DK Metcalf wasn't winning. So that offense was maybe not in a true sense horrific, but compared to what it should have been, really shambolic. Ryan Grubb, former Washington offensive coordinator, takes over that job, had no idea what he was doing. Coaching matters, folks. And now he's at Alabama and they're doing great. So Ryan Grubb might have been the problem all along.
Who's the former Niners? Rich? Skanks?
Oh, Rich. Yeah, Rich. Scangarello. No, Sasha. Yeah, Scannarella. Yeah, he might be that.
Similar trajectory there.
You get yourself a Michael Penix and you just ride it as long as you can. We'll get into that in just a little bit on the show. Regardless, the Seahawks offense looked awesome in the preseason. Take that for whatever it's worth. It looked awesome. Their offensive line in particular looked awesome. Sam Darnold was out here winning 13 games with the Vikings last year in a similar offense. They go with him. The running backs looked awesome. Jackson Smith and Jigba is awesome. Then there are some question marks.
What do we think about, I know this is like literally going sideways before we go upfield, but what do we think about Jalen Milroe getting a couple snaps in this game just with some tricky packages?
Jake, I think they're going to do it. I think that he's their short yardage. I think that he's their short yardage running back. They did it in the preseason where they'd bring him in on third and one, second and ones, and just have him run into the ass of his lineman.
I kind of love it. I think it's smart.
They do it in college a lot more. They don't really do it in the pros, but like, why draft a Jalen Milroe if you can't find a way to use him, right? Like, he's a great athlete. I think he can actually end up being a pretty damn good quarterback. He's got his head on straight. Like, I think that that's something we're going to see this week. Just in the same way, you know, shout out my Missouri Tigers back in the day. Like, here's John Franklin coming in, and he's going to take over for Blaine Gabbert.
Nice.
Don't ask how old I am. Okay.
To answer sort of what you're talking about, Seattle, there's going to be a lot of tight splits. They've got two slot receivers and Smith and Jigba and Cooper Kupp, and I'm not sure that really matters in this day and age. You got a lot of wide receiver ones and Amon-Ra St. Brown and CeeDee Lamb, guys like that are like number ones out of the slot.
Ricky Pearsall.
Kind
of. Eventually. Kinda. I mean, this is the new thing. It's hard to bracket somebody who's in the middle of the field. It's hard to travel with your number one corner if he has to now play nickel. And now, hey, we're just going to run at that spot because you brought your outside corner like a Sauce Gardner who decides I don't tackle. Oh, you decided you wanted him to go one-on-one, but now he's in the box? We're going to run right behind. Like, this guy can block.
I think it's going to be really interesting. I think they might have some struggles early on just in terms of timing and chemistry. I love Torrey Horton. I don't know how involved he'll be outside of returns.
I think he's their starting X, Jake.
I know.
I mean, we'll
see how much they have three receivers on the field. They have AJ Barner. They do have Saubert. I think Elijah Arroyo, maybe not in game one, but in the second half of the season, in terms of like, if you want to talk fantasy, Elijah Arroyo could be like a wide, like a tight end seven or something in the second half of the year for Seattle. Cause he's just, that's all he does is big catch slot. Balls. But I think what's going to determine this is like the offensive line, right? So I was sort of, when they drafted your doppelganger, Gray Zabel, right? Really uncanny. When they drafted him, I figured that was the end of Anthony Bradford, but Zabel's playing left. Bradford is starting at right guard. Let's be clear. Anthony Bradford was horrible.
Downright first 2 years.
Garbage.
Awful.
His first 2 years. Now, what's last he now? Year, he was better in the preseason. He moved well in the run game. Jake, I expect him to still be terrible.
Jake, he wasn't just good in the preseason. He was awesome in the preseason. Now, I'm not saying that preseason is everything, right? You do want to, again, take it with a grain of salt. He looked like a completely different person.
And maybe that's just not having to play next to Stone Forsythe, which is what Seahawks fans are optimistically sort of putting out there. And it does matter being in the league for 3 years. Like, you do pick up on some stuff. I expect him to be better. Like, the tape in the preseason was great.
Their offensive line coach last year, Jake, was some guy from Washington who, listen, they had some talent at Washington, but how are Rosengarten and my man, I forget his name, the Polynesian guy, how are those guys doing? That's a lot. Like, there are some issues there. He didn't know how to coach them up. They have John Benton now. John Benton's like,
former 49ers O-line coach.
He's like the man. If you're putting in an outside zone system, you hire John Benton. He honestly shouldn't be an offensive line coach. He should be a consultant. He'd make 10 times more and just fly from town to town and do offensive line coach for 2 weeks for you. And then, hey, okay, we got the system established. I'm going to the next town. Yeah. Because everybody runs this stuff. And the difference year over year in how good this offensive line looked, again, in preseason, is jarring. I'm sorry, I cut you off, but the John Benton thing is huge.
You're completely right. That's worth pointing out. I think that's going to like determine a lot of how this game goes, to point out the obvious, like how well Seahawks run the ball. But really, like, what does the Niners' defensive front look like? What is their defensive tackle situation? What on earth is that rotation? No one knows. Like, maybe you'll say Jordan Elliott starts and he'll have CJ West next to him. That feels like a good guess.
Yeah.
Right?
Are they going to lead the team in snaps, though? Is that going to be like the go-to duo? I don't know.
And is that going to be an effective unit? Like, no. Jordan Elliott trying to get upfield doesn't really work. If you tell him to just try and hold the gap, maybe that works. The point is, there are a lot of inconsistencies with the Seattle offensive line the last few years. They brought in Zabel, who, like, good God, I saw him, like, get over. Like, there's a defensive tackle who had his leg stuck out.
Yeah.
And he got second level, did a little hop skip over the leg in stride and got second level. And I was like, no one should move like that at that size.
The preseason tape wasn't perfect. There were a couple times where he fell flat on his face, but that's only possible because he moves so well that he had momentum to fall flat on. He kind of got like the chair pulled out from under him, except forward. He has a chance to be really special. Jordan Elliott, not exactly a welcome to the NFL moment. Kind of a, hey, here, you know, let's ease you in here, buddy, for Gray Zabel. One other guy we got to mention here is Jalen Sundell, White Jalen, from North Dakota State. He's going to start at center. And I will butcher it, so I'm not even going to try, but Ulu, their center last year.
Oluwatimi.
Oluwatimi, thank you. I thought he was pretty good in the second half of last year. Like, they had had
Michigan guy, I think.
They didn't have a center to save their life for a long time. They finally get somebody who's solid, and then Sundell comes in and straight up beats him at camp, right? And it's not to say that they won't switch back again at some point if Sundell doesn't do it, but Sundell also looked great in preseason. Yeah. Their interior is really good. I don't know how you feel about Charles Cross. I don't know how you feel about Abraham.
I don't know if it's really good. I want to see it. I want to see it.
I'm planting the flag. It has a chance to be outstanding.
I will say confidently, it's a lot better than it was last year. I don't know if I share the same optimism as you, but I think it's going to be significantly better. And I think they just signed Abe Lucas to an extension at right tackle. We'll see if his knees hold up for them. But he's been good for them, right?
Abe Lucas, an all-time I'm in pain all-star. Like, there are just certain offensive linemen who constantly look in pain. Abe Lucas, always looking like he's in pain.
Every time you look him up, he's got a patellar tendon injury or something.
To be fair, he is probably in pain at all times. The defensive aspect of this for the Niners, I would be remiss not to mention that there is a drumbeat amongst certain members of the media. And this is not a wish casting thing, okay? And I'm not saying that they're wrong about this. There is a undercurrent of narrative happening that Nick Martin starts. Okay. You can watch the video. If you're a member, you can watch the video and Jake and I can explain why that's probably not a great idea. But if that is in fact the case, they could realistically.
I mean, to be clear, Johnny Holland told me he wouldn't be shocked if D. Winters played 90% of the snaps this year.
Right.
So,
I mean, well, Johnny, again, and we have to believe what Johnny Holland says, right? Like, Johnny
fair.
Holland's
totally fair. Totally fair.
He loves to lie. And so, but if we're talking about, let's just throw Martin in there just for the fun and games of it all.
Right.
Okay. Regardless, we're not even going to analyze what that could mean. We're just going to say that's one rookie in. There could be six rookies starting for this team, realistically, first snap against the Seattle Seahawks. We're talking three members of the defensive line, Marquis Siegel, Nick Martin, and I guess depending, they're probably going to start in base, so maybe that's incorrect, but then Upton Stout, who, by the way, we have no idea if Upton Stout is good or not.
And I feel pretty confident he's good, but he is small, and I do worry he's going to get injured a lot.
Outside zone, week one, nickelback. I mean, what's the first rule if you're trying to put together a game plan on offense? Where's the rookie? Go after him. I mean, Seattle might have a hard time figuring out which rookie to go after, but I would start with the smallest one in Upton Stout, and we're going to find out. I mean, this is going to be trial by fire.
And I would run some double teams at Alfred Collins, climb second level. And if I would literally like attack the hell out of Alfred Collins, because there's some good tape, but there is also some tape where he was getting pushed back 7 yards, which is like, that was what he was brought here to not do. And
you're
again,
Kinlaw.
I think it's because they've got him in two ways, very confused.
I'm excited. In theory, we'll see Mikel Williams in this game.
Brother, you got the wrong guy. Bob Sanders.
Wrong position.
Wrong position. That's who Stout. Mustafa got compared to.
Yeah. Mustafa is, and Bob Sanders is a very apt, high-level comparison. Bob Sanders.
Yeah, I'm just saying that's what Daniel Bullock's compared him to last year as a rookie.
Who do you compare our man Siegel to?
Jimmy Ward.
Oh, that is not as lofty. Also, don't look up what Jimmy Ward's been up to.
Man, very sad. Not going to get into that, but very sad.
I love Jimmy Ward. Can't say that publicly. I used loved. There it is.
Yep.
Okay, so the defensive line is just an absolute crapshoot. I imagine we'll see some Jordan Jefferson in this game. We're going to get some.
Maybe that's the way you go. A guy who's just played, and you say, let's see what this looks like. He can just hold the gap, maybe?
Maybe.
Survive?
Maybe. There's a lot. We said that they could do that last year. How'd that work out? And then linebacker, this is as healthy as you're going to get Fred. That's great. D. Winters, in theory, perhaps not. I don't know. Too many people talking about
it. Listen, I don't make the roster decisions. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. Who's going to start at safety?
I kind of do think it should be Pinnick. Siegel. Siegel. Okay. I think Siegel starts for sure.
Is that you making the decision, or do you think that's Kyle Shanahan and Robert Saleh making that decision?
Yes.
Like, what's their decision?
I think yes to both. Okay. I think they have Jair as their third safety. I think they go, Pinnick has been around, and he was like, okay for us.
Yep.
And maybe, sure. Like, again, this is like a coin toss. I'm like, is it Jair or Pinnick? What, 50-50?
Who should get more snaps, I guess is the better question.
I mean, week one, it's a great time to trot him out there and give him a last chance before Mustafa comes back. Give him like a 4 week runway to see.
Yeah.
But if you're talking about who scares you less, it might be Pinnick. I'm not saying I'm a huge Jason Pinnick fan.
I think he's fine. I think that you don't think about Jason Pinnick, and that's the best kind of safety to be if you're a veteran. I'm really curious to see. Because they're going to get tested off the jump. can this team stop the run in any semblance or form? Because last year they couldn't. Last year they couldn't. And all I saw in the preseason was Seattle being like, we're going to be so goddamn good at running the football.
Yeah. And because it's also like the whole thing with the linebackers, whether it's D Winters or Nick Martin, both guys are small, right? Both guys are small 100%. And they fly to the ball. You can only fly to the ball if there's a clear runway to fly to the ball. Otherwise, you need like a Luke Gifford type who's like a little bit bigger and can just sort of slow the mass down.
Right.
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 Because they couldn't protect their linebackers last year. And Fred Warner like suffered sometimes because he's playing on a broken ankle. Yeah. He's getting attacked at the second level because teams go, we actually don't care about their second linebacker. We're just going to make sure Fred is taken care of because we're going to get to the second level and we're going to do it easily. So if they can't shut that down, they're just going to get rocked.
Okay, then there is the third aspect of this game, special teams. The Seahawks have a god for a punter. He's not the punt god, but Michael Dixon is about as good as it gets. Yep. He's unbelievable. Thomas Torrey Morse Horton. Said, there's that. I guess Isaac Arendo is going to be back returning kicks for the Niners. That would make sense, right?
Good. I mean, that's the only thing. Like, just run as fast as you possibly can, and maybe you'll get a role as the season goes.
Totally. And then, then there's the whole Jake Moody of it all. And this game couldn't possibly be tight, and Jake Moody wouldn't possibly be asked to kick a game-winning field goal on the road, would he?
Can I guess what the total on this game is going to be?
Oh, I don't have it up immediately.
I don't either. I don't either. But I'm just going to say, before you look it up,
okay,
I'm going to guess the total's like 38.5.
No, okay, I'm going to go 53. 43.
Is it 53?
53. Let me pull it up right here. This is great radio.
38.5 is crazy low.
It is 43.5. So we somehow found the right answer between our two terrible takes.
Yeah.
Which is usually how it goes.
But like a low scoring game sounds about right.
Yeah. See, 49ers still favored by 2.5 on the road in Seattle. I haven't talked to anybody about this. I would imagine that there are a lot of liabilities on the Niners on the public side. It feels like the public is overbetting the Niners. The volatility is just way too high for this team.
Yeah, I think
overall.
People sort of just assume with the top end of the roster, it's going to be all gravy.
Yeah, how'd that work out last year?
And I think until the injuries go sideways, right? I think that's a fair assumption. But Seattle's unproven too, right? Like Seattle's got a new quarterback, new coordinators, all that stuff, a lot of new rookies.
Yeah.
So I think the line makes sense. I picked the Niners. I do think, honestly, Woodpitt's prediction is about where I'm at with it. 22-17 sounds about right. I was going to go like 23-17, 20-17.
I'll say this. It sounds like a game with limited possessions to me.
Yeah, feels slow. Also, thank you for joining as a member, V-Blank.
I'm killing it today on the...
Enjoy the preseason guide.
Preseason guide's fantastic. You really should check it out. Okay, special teams is there. Jake, real quick, Niners win this game if?
Niners win this game if they limit the Seahawks to 125 yards rushing or less.
I don't readily know how many times they did that last year, but I'm going to guess not a lot. And the 49ers lose this game if 126 yards rushing.
If they can't feed George Kittle effectively.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the 49ers win this game if they can actually get clean windows to pass the ball against these linebackers. Big if. And they lose this game if, in fact, they cannot stop the run, because that opens up a whole world of possibilities for Clint Kubiak in this new Seahawks offense. I'm taking the Seahawks in the game. I like the home field advantage. I like their special teams advantage. I don't like betting on a team that could have 5 or 6 rookies on their defense, even with all the question marks on the Seattle offense right now.
Yeah, my view of like the home field advantage is like it might get pretty nervy. And Sam Darnold might stress a little bit and might get really uncomfortable early, and then the fans get a little tense and that home field advantage goes away.
Yeah.
And it becomes less of a thing in the middle of the game.
All right. What is one super nerdy, crazy, sick matchup thing that you're watching for in this game?
It's a great question. That's a great question. I think it's CJ West and Anthony Bradford.
I'm very curious
to see how that goes.
I have a name for you, Jake, and I think it's a name that we're going to be talking a lot about a lot. I'll be talking about it on Sunday after the game. I think we'll be talking about it a lot on Monday. It's Robbie Oates. Do you know about Robbie
the fullback?
Oates? Yes, it is.
They're going fullback now.
They're going full fullback. Fifth round pick, tight end out of Alabama. Robbie Oates, I think, has a chance to have an absolutely monster game for the Sickos. I'm not talking statistically, but just like, God damn, that Robbie Oates is good. And I was in awe of the Oots in the preseason. And I'm excited to see what that manifests into in the regular season and in this game, just as a complete football dork. By the way, you know, let's just get into it here, Jake. I mean, why even bother? We both picked the Seahawks, I should note. Oh, I should probably have the actual
pick. What is this view for the audience? We're going to do the rest of the show like this.
I think most people would prefer it. So we both picked the Seahawks to win the NFC.
Yes,
by the way, they should go back to the AFC. I remember when that was the case. Jake doesn't. I do. Picked the Seahawks to win the NFC West this year. These are our general picks. Let's just walk through it, Jake. You want to start with the AFC and your picks in the AFC?
The AFC, I have somehow chosen the Baltimore Ravens to win the Super Bowl.
Well, okay, you don't have to go all. We were going to build up to that.
I have to. I'm not going to build up to it.
Okay.
You can build up to it. I ruined it. I absolutely ruined it. I know how I was supposed to do this, but okay. I'm working backwards. So, well, I have to
segment four, end with your Super Bowl pick.
I know.
Jake,
I know. Well, start with I lost Super access Bowl to the sheet. It wouldn't let me look at it.
Okay, fair enough.
So I got Ravens one. I just still think they're a really solid team. I sort of believe in Lamar less than most people do. I think people continually forget that they choke constantly.
That's right.
In the postseason and in key moments. And then they go, oh, how dare you say Lamar is not a complete player? It's like, I just watched him choke. What are you talking about?
Every postseason, he decides that he needs to like prove some point that's being made on the internet wrong. And he just totally glitches out. There's really no other explanation. He just glitches out as a quarterback.
Right.
He's almost set an NFL record in passing yards last year.
Right. By the way, Lee, Stafford's not healthy, and that's why the Rams aren't in here.
Pull that up again. Let's read that back.
It says, If Stafford is healthy, how is it the Rams?
What kind of experts are these two? Well, we're one, experts that know the Rams, and two, Matt Stafford, who's been living in an immortal chamber. He has been living in a oxygenated room, it's an airstream, and laying down on like a vibrating red light bed. He spent a month on this thing in the preseason just so that he could get ready for week one. They play the Houston Texans in week one. I don't know if you guys know this about the Houston Texans, but their defense hits pretty hard. So the idea that Matt Stafford is going to live through this season is laughable. Also, I don't like their defense, so that's why.
Also, Lee says it's sarcasm. Appreciate you clarifying, Lee.
You gotta put the dash S on it. We don't know.
Anyway,
people can't even figure out if I'm being sarcastic, and I have no other modes.
I know. All right, I'm gonna rip through my AFC after already botching this. I've got Ravens one. I have the Chiefs still holding on two. Bills, you know, coming through. I think Josh Allen sort of carries them. And then the Colts four. I kind of like the Colts, man.
What is it you like about the Colts?
I already
talked about it. We talked about it in the
previous episode.
Yeah. Yeah. No, still not getting it.
I still think, I think they got a lot of decent pieces. I think they were able to do a lot with like nothing last year. And, you know, Tyler Warren could be an interesting piece for him this year. Could
valid. I'll
could
give
do
you
some
Tyler
stuff.
Warren. Okay. Bengals, number, Broncos, Chargers.
Yeah. Well, I've got Bengals, Broncos, Chargers. You could flip the Broncos and the Chargers. I think the Chargers get screwed at the start of their schedule and have to fight all year to sort of make up for it.
Yeah.
That's how I see that going. I think the Broncos just have an awesome defense still. They're going to sort of ground and pound their way to like 10 wins.
Yeah.
And just be a tough out. And that's why I have them in the playoffs. I think they're a giant beater. I think whoever they face in the playoffs in round one, they're going to beat.
Yeah. Well, in this case, you have Buffalo.
Have them beating Buffalo. And I think the Chargers, who I would never pick otherwise because they have Jim Harbaugh, I think they will knock off the Chiefs. Wow. In a year that the Chiefs are kind of floozy. I think it's going to be an opposite year where like the Chiefs actually like do fine in the regular season and then like collapse in the playoffs after everyone's like, oh, they're terrible. And then they, you know,
how many games did they win in the regular season last year, Jake?
Couldn't tell you what, like 14.
They won 15. They won 15.
But I mean, like everyone would like
down year.
They were terrible.
Yeah,
you know,
because they went 10-0 in one score games. I'm starting to think that that might have something to do with them being good at football.
I know. I just think this is like going to be like a weird year. Okay. And the Chargers knock them out. I'm going to go Cincy over Indy. And then that sets up the Ravens against the Chargers, Bengals against Denver. I'm taking Baltimore and I'm taking Cincy. And then the Ravens make it to the Super Bowl because they get basically they avoid having to play the Bills or the Chiefs. That's the route.
I've never seen a more Saturday afternoon playoff game in my life than Cincinnati, Indianapolis.
100%. 100%.
That is the Deshaun Watson, Houston Texans slot that they just slide right in there. That is just absolutely perfect. Let me quickly go through my AFC. Ravens, Chiefs. We agree there. I think that the Ravens are an absolute regular season juggernaut. They have a chance to lose like two games. We went over this in the brash, ridiculous, over-the-top predictions. AFC South sucks. I'm taking the Titans. I like too many of the pieces there. I think competent quarterback play puts them over the top. I think the Dolphins squeak in. I'm not picking Buffalo. I don't like their defense. I think injury regression's coming in a big way. On average, there are six new playoff teams every year. I'm picking five across the NFL. And I feel even too bold doing that. So just remember that when people saying, oh, this is ridiculous. Like, you got to swap out half of these teams every year. No, I don't have the Niners in mind. We'll get to that in a second. I have the Chargers. Don't feel awesome about it. Feel very good about the Broncos. But I do think that an early season loss, and there's going to be a lot of ties and tiebreakers. There's that. Yeah. And I think the Texans sneak in. But they don't win their division. I think that the Texans have a spurt of just absolutely god-awful football, perhaps even to start, but get it figured out as the season goes along. Their defense is too good for me to bet against much in the same way as the Broncos and maybe even the Chargers.
I think their O-line like collapses and just hangs C.J. Stroud out to dry in like the last four games of the year. He's just playing through a broken rib and their offense can't move the ball.
Give me Kansas City over Houston again. Give me Denver over Tennessee. That's an easy one. Give me the Chargers over Miami. Ugh, bad wild card round in the AFC.
Yep.
And then two fascinating games. Kansas City and the Chargers. I'm going to take Kansas City. And then I'm going to take Denver over Baltimore because Lamar short circuits again. I'm going to run through NFC. You can hit NFC after me. Eagles, without a question. Anyone who's not taking Eagles as the one seed is just doing my Josh Allen prediction. That's just wish casting at this point. They're so far and away better than anything else. I got the Vikings at two. They were awesome last year. I do question their defensive depth, but I don't question their defensive top end. And it's like if Sam Darnold can do it, JJ McCarthy can do it. In fact, he probably even do it better. Buccaneers, I guess, have to. I don't feel it. No one feels anything about that. I got the Seahawks beating the 49ers in week 18 to take the one spot for the NFC West at 10 wins. And then the Packers, who will be a double-digit win team, the Bears, who will be a double-digit win team, and then the Falcons, who will win a tiebreaker. Let's circle a date on our calendar, folks. October 19th, 49ers and Falcons, going to loom large. Minnesota over Atlanta. By the way, I think Atlanta's offense is going to be totally awesome. I think their defense is going to be totally terrible. They might be full Bengals here. It's going to be fun. Minnesota over Atlanta. Tampa Bay over Chicago in a former NFC Central matchup. Shout out to NFC Central. Green Bay over Seattle in the playoffs. I got Green Bay taking down Philadelphia. I do think that the wear and tear of being the Philadelphia Eagles for the last 4 years is going to rear its ugly head at some terrible point. And the Packers are the youngest team in the NFL. Eagles, I believe, are the second youngest team in the NFL, I should note. But still, wear and tear. And then Minnesota, Tampa Bay, which brings us to Jake's NFC picks.
Yeah, again, same at the top. Eagles, Vikings, Bucks, Seahawks. I have the Niners and Seahawks going down the last game and the Niners blowing it. I'm not going to explain why. Go get the guide. Go get the season guide.
Yes.
After that, I have the Packers as a wild card. Mm-hmm. I've got the Niners at 6, Falcons at 7.
Who else was in contention for that 7 spot for you, Jake?
Everyone. Every team in the NFC.
Legitimately, like, I could make a case for the Carolina Panthers.
Yeah, no, I thought about it. I thought about every team. I thought about every NFC West team.
That's so right.
I thought about every NFC North team. Sure. Could it be the Bears? Of course. Could be anyone.
Isn't that wonderfully fitting? I mean, I picked the Falcons because I have the Falcons winning in a game-by-game breakdown that I'm doing over the Niners on that Monday Night Football game. And that would be like some tiebreaker and like rear its ugly head. That was my big mental narrative. But isn't it so fitting that you're like, I don't know anybody. And you just go, the Falcons, like the most forgettable, just plug them in team in the NFL. Like, oh, right. Atlanta. Like that's a perfect pick when you're just like, anyone will do. Just give me the Falcons.
Yep. I love it. In the playoffs, I've got Minnesota beating the Falcons. The Niners kind of get a nice matchup against Tampa Bay.
Yeah, they do.
Green Bay beats Seattle. And by the way, folks, I'm not even a Jordan Love fan, which is going to make the next slide extremely funny.
Well, it's a narrative-based award. We'll talk about it in a second.
Exactly my point. So then I've got the Eagles beating the Niners. The Niners just sort of wear down and can't pull it off with the rookies. They have a great run, you know, but the Philly beats them. And then Green Bay beats Minnesota. I think both quarterbacks suck in that game. Both try and blow it, but, you know, Green Bay
Something to note there. That game would be played in a dome.
It's true. This is true. This would be... Listen, Jordan Love's going to have his mind boggled. He's not going to know what to do, but it will be the third matchup of the season against the Vikings.
Yeah.
And they're going to come through, and Jordan Love's going to have like one clutch moment at the end of games, way out of character, and he's going to get irrationally confident. It's sort of going to be like a Joe Flacco playoff moment.
Oh my God. That's not the worst comparison I've ever heard. Joe Flacco.
No, it's not. Joe Flacco in the playoff. Yeah.
No, but exactly. Not even that. I mean, we're going to expand on that later. And then we come to this.
Yep.
The picks. Super Bowl. We already know who the fuck.
Yeah, I have Green Bay, by the way, beating the Eagles, even though, again, not a Jordan Love fan.
Not a Jordan Love fan. Who's your MVP, Jake? Okay, yeah. I think Patrick Mahomes could set the single season passing touchdown record this year. I think that the Chiefs kind of heard what we were all saying about them being a dink and dunk, rinky dink operation last year and are about to flip and explode, and Xavier Worthy is going to go thermonuclear on these folks. And I got Mahomes just having like a historically great passing season, and I'm taking the Chiefs over the Packers. Replay of Super Bowl I in Santa Clara, so I'll get to see the Chiefs win another flipping Super Bowl.
Yeah, I have Jordan Love mostly for the memes. I saw Dieter's list, and it was like a little bit too rational, and so I really wanted to get Galaxy Brain on every single one.
Okay, who is Brown? Which Brown is your OPY Offensive Player of the Year?
Chase Brown.
Love it. That's a great pick. It's legitimately a great pick. He was awesome last year, and they're going to put up crazy numbers in Cincinnati because they can't stop anyone. That's Big 12 football, baby.
If any of these hit. Yeah, so Jordan Love, just because he throws for like 6,000 yards, even though it's like he's like 12 interceptions, but he just throws for so many yards that like it's whatever.
Yeah.
And so he gets it. And even though I feel like they kind of have to win the division for that to make sense, and I didn't pick that. So whatever.
They made the playoffs. I get it. You're talking Jordan Love? Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah,
so, maybe but they'll have like 12 wins. So it'll be like, oh, well, the Vikings.
I think that they're going to like lose the division on like a tiebreaker. And totally. So it's like totally irrelevant on, you know, right. They didn't win the division. It's like, well, they have the same amount of wins. So totally. I think that division has a chance to be like totally awesome. I'm going to take Derrick Henry. He almost had 2,000 yards last year. I think he gets 2,000 yards this year. It's unstoppable. Yeah. One of the reasons that I kind of get after people with the Brian Robinson stuff. And again, to be clear, I think Brian Robinson is a solid NFL running back. He is neither good nor bad. He is certainly of a threshold of quality that needs to be overtaken by everyone and to make yourself. So he's going to get a second and a third contract. Like, he's a good player, but he had football Jesus in the backfield with him last year, the NFL's best rusher in Jane Daniels. And he couldn't get anything more than what the offensive line was giving him. Meanwhile, Derrick Henry, after suffering for decades, yeah. It seems, for eternity in Tennessee with nothing to help him, taking them single-handedly to the playoffs repeatedly, gets Lamar Jackson. He's like, check this out, nearly 2,000 yards. This year, same thing, nearly 2,000 yards for Derrick Henry. He is immortal. He is incredible. Derrick Henry's my offensive player of the year. I'm taking Will Anderson from the Texans as my defensive player of the year. I think this is the name. The year where everyone figures out who Will Anderson is and what it is he does.
Yeah.
And anyone who's on this channel, I would hope you'd already know, he nice. He real nice.
He's great. He's great. I think that's a great pick. I just have Max Crosby because I think this is like one of the few competitive seasons Crosby gets to play. I think the Raiders don't make the playoffs, but they are frisky. They're just like a weird team. Now, do they only have four wide receivers and two of them are rookies currently? Yeah. Is that a problem? You could make the case it's an issue. But they also got two good tight ends, so whatever.
Yeah.
Do they have a great defense? Not particularly.
No. Their secondary starting man is
named Cube Lou Kelly. I believe he played for BYU. Yeah. Why do I know that? Don't worry about it. But I just think Crosby gets like a sniff of a team being competitive and goes off for like 19 and a half. So,
I mean, defensive player of the year is like, did you have 18 or more sacks? Congrats. You're the defensive player of the year. If not, we will just pick the best corner. That is how that works.
It's not a good pick because the rest of their team on defense is really worrying.
Oh, don't worry though, because it doesn't matter if those 18 sacks are legitimate or not. Like, if you just get some home cooking. And by the way, the Raiders have been known to cook for their hometown team, whatever town that is these days. Like, especially small market. Like, you ever look at OKC's box scores? Everyone's getting assists. Everyone's getting like, it's the same thing with the Raiders, I've heard. I think Crosby steals like 7 sacks that no one can ever find on video.
And then, I've got Emeka Egbuka just because I love Emeka Egbuka. Is Ashton Jeanty the easiest, obvious choice? Sure.
Can't go to Raiders.
We're not lame. Okay.
You can't pick two Raiders for your players of the year.
We're not lame. We're actually cool as hell.
Also, like, I think Ashton Jeanty is about to average 3.8 yards per carry all year. And people be like,
oh, get him the offensive rookie.
He was an 1,100 yard runner. It's like, yeah, on how many fucking carries? No, it's going to be Cam Ward, because if you are a rookie quarterback who has some semblance of success, and I am picking the Tennessee Titans to win their division, you automatically get it. Just unless it's a Kenny Pickett year, you get it. So that's who's going to win offensive rookie of the year. Make your bets now. I'm going to take Mike Green.
It's a really good choice.
That is my defensive rookie of the year. I do not condone anything about Mike Green, but the boy can get after it, and the Baltimore Ravens need somebody like that. One of the reasons why the Ravens I'll go full bore here. I think the Ravens lose one damn game all regular season, and then again, I don't even think they made the NFC Championship game, or AFC Championship game in mind.
Who knows? I can't remember. I have Donovan Ezeraku, who I wasn't even like extremely high on.
Yep.
Flashy, bendy player, but no Micah Parsons. And kid's going to play.
Good luck to you.
Play. So I'll say he gets like 10 sacks and gets it.
Do you have, in here, I can just pull it up here just for the sake of, or can I? We're going to find out. Do you have a particular player or a particular Super Bowl bet that you enjoy? Like a not you, you've made your pick here. You know, you got Baltimore. Good choice. Do you have something that says, hey, this is a good value pick?
Are you talking about an in-game or like future bet on the Super Bowl?
We're talking about future. We're talking about Atlanta great future. Here are the championship odds as I last pulled them. Sorry, Jake. I don't know if you can actually read that or not. I'll just help you out. Packers at 14-1. I'm sure that's gone down since then. Seems like a pretty good bet, given that I have them in the Super Bowl. I'll throw Houston at 25-1, because if it comes together, it comes together in a really nice way. Good. And they have the kind of defense. And then, like, way off the beaten path, if you're talking crazy town, Bears at 30-1, Seahawks at 60-1. And I don't mind Seahawks at 30-1 to win the NFC.
Yeah, I don't hate the Rams. I do hate them. Never mind.
The rivalry is strong.
I tried to talk myself into it.
By the way, Niners on this, as I see it, and again, this is when I pulled it, I think it was a couple days ago, plus 850 to win the conference and 20-1 to win the Super Bowl, which feels about right.
I'm a little bit tickled by the Denver Broncos.
Good pick.
To win the conference.
Win the conference at 14-1. Yeah. Yeah. There's something there. There's something there for sure. Jake, there's nothing more for us here. No. You're going to New York.
Yeah, we'll be watching the game in the Big Apple, which I can say because I'm from New Jersey.
Never, ever, ever do that again. Jake, Jake will talk to you all on Monday. What's up?
I guess we had one super chat.
Oh, I apologize. That is the next part of the show.
I'll pull it up. It's mostly a question for you.
Oh yeah. Okay. Here we go. What goes through your head while Larry Kruger asks 15 minutes of hypothetical multiple choice questions? I don't know. You can ask Jake. That's what I'm doing. I've just been doing that to him all show.
Well, try and get the answer out as quickly as possible, and then remember what the next part is, and then another topic comes up, and then you're in the cyclone.
So we're in a Jamie Taco situation, is what you're telling me.
That's right.
You got to get your lines out before Jamie Taco. It is okay. So actually, I'll just give you a quick lowdown here. I can't do Thursday nights with Larry anymore. Because what is this thing? I have a life, and specifically two small children who I have to take care of that night because of Asia and some corporate thing. I don't know. I don't keep up with that nonsense. So I can't do Thursday nights anymore. Larry and I are going to do Monday nights tentatively from here on out. And I will get a refill of whatever prescription drugs I'm going to need to get through those shows. So we're going to attack that.
And I think we said we're doing Mondays, but we'll probably end up doing Tuesdays.
This is news to me.
I thought this is what we were talking about. We're doing after the game on Sundays.
After the game on Sundays, right? Yep. Will have a camera in their face and yap.
And then we got to watch the tape. And we would do Monday, but I don't think the tape comes out until Tuesday.
I think we might do a morning after quick hit just for fun. And you know what? We might make it members only. You don't know. You don't know yet. We don't know yet. But yeah, there will be a tape breakdown for sure at some point during the week, be that Monday or Tuesday. There will be reactions after the game. There might be reactions the next morning. And count on Thursdays and us just bringing you home, bringing you into the week. We got takes. We got offensive line talk. We're talking about fullbacks. We're going in on John Benton. You learn so much, and yet you learn nothing at all. All right, Jake, I'll talk to you.
Go get the season guide.
Oh,
see you guys on Sunday-ish. Maybe. Bye.